There are lots of reasons why people develop cancer. There's natural radiation, there's cosmic radiation, there are chemicals in the environment, there are all kinds of things that predispose you and some people genetically more to cancer. That's the point. There are many other causes. And as Rachel Carson pointed out in her book, Silent Spring, it is a combination often, the synergistic action of radiation making the existing chemicals more damaging. It's called synergy. And we know this from the uranium miners. When the uranium miners smoked, but, you know, didn't work in the mine, but worked in the office or were not in the mine, they died at 5 to 10 times the normal rate from smoking cigarettes and whatever else was in the cigarettes. When they worked in the mine and didn't smoke, the radon and the other radioactive gases and daughter products of uranium increased their cancer rates again by 5 to 10 times. But if they smoked in the mine and inhaled the radioactive gases, it was between 25 and 100-fold. They multiply each other, and that is why radiation is so significant. It multiplies the potential of many other agents in the environment, such as diesel smoke and chemicals and many, many other drugs you take and so on can all be enhanced by the action of radiation. And there are many books on synergism, and especially in Germany and at the university, at the, I think, the town of Bremen or Hamburg, one of them had a department that issued a big pamphlet, a big book, about synergism of radiation. And that's a very important aspect. Well, now let's take a look at what happened over the years in this country and to the Japanese. These are non-whites, which includes mainly black, but also some Chinese and Asian people. And you can see that for years, during the time of dirty coal plants and everybody smoking, there was no increase in the age-adjusted cancer mortality for U.S. and the Japanese. It was only after the beginning of the atomic bomb that we see this enormous rise in the cancer rates. Now again, you cannot look at this and say there's no harm, even though we may not know every biological mechanism that's involved. We can't get away from these hard figures that have been collected and that are reliable because they're collected by people who didn't know what they were collecting. You know, I mean, so it's really an unbiased kind of study. Well, now let's take a look at something else. You know, all Hawaii is a wonderful place for taking a vacation, right? It's a beautiful place where it had practically no factories and no smoke and no giant power stations like we have. And let's take a look what happened in Hawaii after 1940 for breast cancer, which we all believe is only due to chemicals, right? This happens to be mortality. This is mortality rate. And this doesn't even consider incidence, which is higher. But the mortality was not increasing during this time. From 1940 to 1945, 46, nobody was smoking, right? All of a sudden they smoked and breast cancer developed, right? So we cannot look at this kind of data and say there's no effect, there's no evidence. Okay, we can't find any other explanation for it. Anybody has any other explanation for these kinds of peaks suddenly coming about? I mean, seriously. I mean, you have to think about it. Well, let's look at something else. So far we looked at breast cancer, but now let's take a look at the rate of malignant neoplasms of the respiratory system. All of a sudden, the people in Hawaii started to smoke, right? All of a sudden, they started to smoke. And I'll show you later that this is the opposite. Actually, what happened, since about 1960, smoking has declined in the United States among women. But this, every time there was a test that circulated around the world, and the reason why Hawaii was so hard hit is because rain brings down 80 to 90% of fallout. And there are heavy rainfalls in Hawaii as there are in Florida. So everything you'll see later and what I'm showing you, many effects are directly related to the amount of rainfall per year, okay? That's why fallout is such a very serious problem in areas of high rainfall. And here's the evidence. Remember, we were talking about the UNICEF thing, and it was shown that, yes, circulatory heart disease should be affected. Well, here's your answer. It did. I gave this testimony in Congress many years ago in the 1970s. And it shows what happened. In New Mexico, it was very low rainfall. And Illinois and Missouri with very high rainfall. But they all showed a huge rise of mortality due to arteriosclerotic heart disease. Okay? And it peaked at the time of the last atomic bomb test. And then began actually to level off and has since come down for a while. Okay? And now let's see how well it is related to rainfall. Here is the same mortality rate plotted as a function of the inches of rainfall. And you see, except for the anomalous, slightly anomalous location of Georgia, all the others are really in direct relationship to the amount of rainfall, and the increase is amazing. And it is connected with something that comes down with the rain. Well, does cigarette smoke come down with rain? I mean... I mean, you understand. You have to think about this when you try to present it to people who are not epidemiologists. You say, can you explain this? Cigarette smoke coming down with the rain? I mean, that's what you have to use. That's the only way you can get to people, like people in Congress or your local senator or whatever. Now let's take a look and be a little more serious. If both cancer and heart disease were strongly affected, what would you expect to happen to total mortality? Does anybody have any idea what would happen? The reason we have to laugh is because 20 million people died here. That's the only way I can stand it. If I think about it, it's too terrible. I lost many in my family because of early death by cancer or heart disease, okay? So what happened is very clear, right? Since 1900, this was coming down at a constant percentage rate, something like 1 to 2% a year, 2%, close to that, in the whole country, except for the epidemic the flu epidemic and World War II, World War I. Then it came down again. And then all of a sudden, suddenly, after about 1950, it just refused to continue to go down. There are 20 million people that died prematurely in this black area, okay? Heart disease, cancer, and other diseases, all of which can be affected, even infectious diseases, if your immune system is destroyed, okay? And then what should have happened after the end of bomb testing, it should have come down again, right? It should have come down to the baseline. Why didn't it? The giant nuclear plants began to operate in about 1970 to 75. Okay? The first 1,000 megawatt nuclear plants began to operate in the early 70s. Okay? And now we will have to explore and see whether or not this hypothesis keeps standing up. Okay? And what you do is you look at the data. You don't look at theories, you look at data. Right? So let's look at something. First of all, I just mentioned to you that the immune system is so heavily affected, and we know that strontium 90, and by the way, there's a wonderful paper by Starkey and Oftedal that was published many years ago that showed in animals that if they were given small amounts of strontium 90, there was a very sharp decline, an effect on the white cells in their body, okay? And it rose very quickly for low doses and flattened out at high doses. And they found that this was very serious effect on the immune system of animals. And we're animals, unfortunately. So, what about babies? We showed you what happened to adults, including babies, and now this is just babies, okay? 0 to 1 year old in the United States since 1935. And this is plotted on a logarithmic scale on which a constant decline is a straight line, okay? It's the same plot, but done on a logarithmic scale. And you see what happened. at the time here early in 1950, it began to level off and wouldn't go down anymore. In fact, in 1958, turned out to be the first time that it was peaking in the United States. It should not have, you know, it failed to go down. But then when the bomb testing stopped, it went down, unlike the case for the adults. Remember? The adults flattened out. But the gap remained. And why didn't the gap disappear? Well, if I'm saying, and I'm saying this is a hypothesis at this point, that what happened is that when the end of bomb testing took place, and the last bomb test, by the way, was in 1980. The last atmospheric bomb test didn't occur until 1980. But our U.S. and USSR and U.K. bomb testing ended in 1962, 63. But it kept being up. And I'm saying it was probably due to nuclear plants. So now it's our job to try to demonstrate that this is really the case. Okay? Why? Why would clean nuclear plants that are too cheap to meter do such terrible things? But this is why it's so important to look at the time of bomb testing, because this fallout is exactly the same stuff that comes out of a nuclear reactor. Okay? Including all the wonderful no-effect gases like xenon and krypton, which don't harm anybody, you know, except they create ozone and nitric oxide in the air, and they also decay into other products which eventually kill you. Well, anyway, but here we're only talking about the rise in infant mortality, then the decline at the end of bomb testing. You can't have a better experiment with an animal colony. You turn on its cancer-producing substance, and then you get rid of it. And by God, it went down, and it went right back down to the baseline. There were no nuclear reactors here. So that is one way to test the hypothesis, right? Right now, we can see that in a state that had no reactor, nearby nuclear reactor, it went right back to the baseline and continued to decline at the previous rate. It's a beautiful, simple picture. Now let's take a look at a state that didn't have such good luck. Ever heard of the state of Maryland? You know where Maryland is located? Maryland is located downwind from Three Mile Island, okay? Very close. Let's take a look. What happened there? See a difference between Wyoming and Maryland? Here is proof that nobody died at Three Mile Island. They only heard about it and died. They weren't affected. They were stressed into believing that they should die. That's what was said. They were stressed. There was no serious radiation, not enough to produce such a terrible effect. I mean, it was impossible. The tiny amount of radiation, which we know from 100 years of studying radiation in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, where there was gamma rays and x-rays and neutrons and x-rays and all these people, all these 100 years of experience with x-rays, and they tell us that, you can't die from this small amount of radiation. In theory, you cannot die of it, don't you see? The trouble is that many, many people have died at very low levels, hundreds to thousands of times below where we thought it was possible to see anything, okay? And as an engineer who worked in the company that built the very first peaceful reactor, too cheap to meter, was in Shippingport, where I lived. And I reported to the guy who designed the core. And we all felt it was a wonderful achievement to get rid of all the filth and dirt in the city. Right? When my wife told me that when she was a child, she walked to school, it started to snow. By the time she got to school, the snow was black. Well, we got rid of the black. But we got something else that we never anticipated, you see? That's how human beings are. We are not gods. We cannot always anticipate every possible thing that happens in our environment. Well, now let's look at something else. Let's look at the states for infant mortality, state by state, and I picked six states like Illinois, like here, that have a lot of nuclear reactors, and let's compare it with states that have no nuclear reactors, and then you tell me whether you see a difference. Now, the upper states are the states like New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Illinois, Florida, and Georgia. You see, they all have a bump from the bomb testing, and they all fail to go down back to the baseline. But now let's look at states like Nevada, New Mexico, Kentucky, West Virginia, and Wyoming that have no reactors. And one reactor was operating in the Hanford site for a little while in Hanford, okay? Do you see any difference in the shape? Here it all came back down to the baseline. That is a paper I gave just now in February in Washington at the AAAS, okay? And I'm going to hope to publish a full paper very shortly in some journal. But it is an incredible simple picture. You have reactors, you get a bump, it doesn't come back down. And if you don't have nuclear reactors, the children are born and healthy and they live more than 1 year. Where would you rather live? Huh? Would you like to live in Maryland? Well, anyway. Illinois is just as bad. Almost.
You're listening to Dr. Ernest Sternglass of the University of Pittsburgh speaking at the Citizen Epidemiology Conference last month at Northwestern University. Dr. Sternglass showed data that suggests babies born downwind of nuclear power plants have lower birth weight and are more often premature than those born far away from any nuclear power plants.
Now, all this is not related to radiation, you understand. Absolutely. There's no evidence here, and we don't know the mechanism, therefore it can't be radiation, right? We don't know the mechanism, therefore it can't be. If we don't understand the biological mechanism, then all this is meaningless, right? Right. Look at Grundy. Grundy County has wonderful statistics, okay, here in Illinois. And this is the percent change in immature birth, premature birth, okay? And do you see a difference between Grundy and six counties way up to the west in the same state as Illinois? Is there some difference that's going on there? It happened to be that there were large releases from the Dresden reactor, which at the time were being published in print. They no longer are after 1993. So, you see, with enough data, you can really show things that you don't have to have a biological mechanism for. Who cares what the damn biological mechanism is? The baby's dying like that. When there's a known release, and when it stops, it goes down. Okay? Same thing is true for infant mortality. Same thing is true for brain cancer and other cancers in that county. Well, now let's take a look at the relation of birth weight to various measures of school failure. We have problems. We want to get better schools. We say that the kids can't read, the kids can't write because we have bad schools, bad teachers, and so on, right? But what happens to children that are born prematurely and underweight? This is what happens. Very low birth weight has much higher rate of problems in schools, okay? It's all documented. And the lower the birth weight is, the greater is the damage to the future brain development of this child. And because we have by now been able to get the data from California on autism for all the over 50 counties in California, and it completely supports the idea that when a reactor shut down, the rates of autism go down. When a reactor starts up, the rates of autism go up. And so what we have here is we are destroying the very future of our nation by having more and more children once again being born underweight and prematurely. There is no more important thing that a nation can do to destroy itself than to ruin the future of its offspring. Okay? Nothing is worse. We all have to die sooner or later. But if we produce children which are increasingly unable to function and compete in a world with people who are healthy and didn't have this terrible impact in their early, during early intrauterine development, then this nation is not able to function economically, and it's destroying itself with health costs. That is a nation that cannot face the fact that the low-level radiation from the bomb testing is now being replaced by low-level radiation from the nuclear reactors. We cannot face it because we want to keep the bombs. They are our safety blanket. They helped us to get through the Cold War, and they'll forever protect us. Instead, the bombs are destroying our future. Because as long as we want to have bombs, we can't tell the public that using them would be suicidal for us. It would all blow back. It's like giving a soldier a gun with two barrels and say, you go and fire this gun at your enemy. He says, but why the other barrel? Oh, don't ask. Well, finally, you know, he's persistent. He says, I won't fire until you tell me. He says, well, I'm afraid to say the other barrel is aimed at your baby at home. Would he pull the trigger? Would you pull the trigger?
That was Dr. Ernest Sternglass, Professor Emeritus of Radiological Physics at the University of Pittsburgh School of Medicine. For more information about the 2000